Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. Today we have some really interesting guests. In the first half, we have Anthony LaSquadro, and he is an activist, and he is going to be speaking about why men are opting out. And then in the second half, we have Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, and we're going to talk about alternatives for pain. But first, we have Alan with the Health First News.
There's a good chance that some cases of the mysterious polio-like illness seen recently in U.S. children may have been misdiagnosed, a new study reports. Acute flaccid myelitis, which causes potentially life-threatening paralysis and primarily strikes children, has been recurring in the United States in every other year waves since 2014. But it's likely some kids diagnosed with AFM actually have some other neurological disorder, and it's an equally good possibility that some true cases of AFM are being missed, said study lead researcher Dr. Matthew Elric, a pediatric neurologist with Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore. The new study was published November 30th in the journal JAMA Pediatrics. Electrical stimulation of a certain part of the brain may offer a new option for treatment-resistant depression, a small new study suggests. Researchers at the University of California, San Francisco, found that 25 patients with moderate to severe depression gained significant improvement in their mood after electrical stimulation of a brain region called the orbital frontal cortex. After just 3 minutes of electrical stimulation to the cortex, even on just one side of the brain, patients said things like, "Wow, I feel better, I feel less anxious, I feel calm, cool, and collected," university postdoctoral researcher Kristen Seller said in the university news release. The report was published November 29th in Current Biology. Have you ever wondered why hair grows on some parts of your body but not others? New research offers a possible explanation. Scientists found that hairless skin secretes a protein that blocks a signaling pathway, WNT, that controls hair growth. Called DICOPS2, the protein is found in specific embryonic and adult tissues and has a variety of functions, the University of Pennsylvania researchers explained. They found that plantar skin from mice, similar to the underside of the human wrist, had high levels of DKK2. When they genetically removed DKK2 from the mice, hair began to grow in this normally hairless skin region. The study was published November 28th in the journal Cell Reports. The hearts of women who snore appear to become damaged more quickly than those of men who saw lumber at night, a new study suggests. Evaluating nearly 4,500 British adults who underwent cardiac imaging, researchers also learned that obstructive sleep apnea may be vastly underdiagnosed among snorers. This finding surprised study author Dr. Adrian Curta, who heads cardiac imaging at Munich University Hospital in Germany. Curta said a further surprise was the different manifestation of disease according to gender. Females show different alterations in cardiac measures. The report was to be presented last week at the annual meeting of the Radiological Society of North America in Chicago.
Anthony LaSquadro is the founder and director of Intaction.org, and he raises awareness around the importance of an intact body. So welcome, Anthony.
Oh, thank you, Kathy. Thank you for having me on your show.
That's excellent. How long have you been working with Intaction?
Well, it may seem a little unusual, but my job is telling people about the four powers of foreskin and why foreskin is awesome. And I've been conducting this advocacy and giving lectures on this for over 10 years, so I'm very familiar with the subject.
Yeah, and so can you share with our community, what is circumcision?
Well, circumcision is the term given when they remove the foreskin from the penis.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's happened for centuries. Can you give us a little history around it?
Well, you know, the history, a century, it goes back millennia, actually. You know, the earliest recorded history goes back to hieroglyphics of the Egyptians, of the ancient Egyptians, where they did it to their priests, because the priests were supposed to be pure, and they removed all their body hair and they removed their foreskin. And then other peoples of that area emulated that and they started to pick it up. But it was really limited to that area of the world. When you look back into Europe, going back thousands of years, even into ancient Greece and the Hellenistic period, Europeans never practiced circumcision, and most people around the world never practiced circumcision.
So it's a very small pockets in the world that actually went through with this. And what are the reasons for circumcision?
Well, you know, in the United States and in the English-speaking countries like UK and Canada and Australia, it was done. It started in the Victorian age, which is around the late 1800s, and there was really a belief that they needed to prevent masturbation, especially amongst young men. They thought by removing the foreskin, because it's so sensitive and it's so densely packed with nerve endings, that they would discourage the practice. And you had early advocates like Kellogg's, which was the inventor of Kellogg's Corn Flakes. He was a big advocate of this. He was like the celebrity doctor of the day. And then doctors picked up the practice because they realized they could make money doing this, and they claimed they could cure polio, and they could cure typhus, and they could prevent constipation and orthopedic problems. Any type of problem that they could somehow tie into the nervous system, they claimed circumcision could cure it.
And in this day and age, what doctor would believe that?
You know, the medical industry has continued to try to come up with new reasons to continue the practice and continue their insurance reimbursements. You know, in the United States, we're a fee-for-service medical system, so doctors get paid for what they can bill. When you look into the Canadian medical system or the European national health systems, they don't do it. And as a matter of fact, in the Canadian Pediatric Society, in their 2015 policy statement, they specifically said the Canadian Pediatric Society does not recommend routine circumcision.
Wonderful. And yet, I looked, we're up in Canada, and I looked, and like our stats are probably less than 30% right now. I don't know what it is in the States. But if you've been working on educating people to the importance of an intact body over a decade, how much have you seen change in the United States?
You know, we're seeing a lot of change. First of all, people want a more healthier, natural type of lifestyle, and in America, we're starting to realize that, you know, if nature puts something on your body, you should just leave it there. You know, foreskin, it's in our DNA. Nature intended us to have it. It's part of who we are, and it's part of what makes us human.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the American circumcision rates, the last data we have, which was from a few years ago, was like around 56% circumcision rate, and it's dropping at about 2% a year. So we're getting pretty close to the 50-50 mark. And when we look at attitudes, when we can do surveys of people's attitudes, and the surveys we've done, and there was a YouGov online poll survey that was done, YouGov.org, and when you look at people like under 40 years old, they're like from 70% to 80% against circumcision. So the younger generations, the millennials, the Generation Ys and the Generation Xs and stuff, they're really, you know, they're not invested in the decisions of the past and the practices of the past. And their belief is that just it's there for a reason, just leave it there.
Absolutely, yeah. So when you say it's in our DNA, and really all mammals, I think all mammals have a foreskin, all male mammals, it is totally natural and totally the ability to take care of it and not have any problems down the road is very safe, and it's very high rate of health, isn't it?
I mean, it is. You know, when we look into the European medical data, because in Europe, like, the males there are like 99% intact. They look at Americans as crazy. Why would you do this to your children? But when you look at their medical data, when they're almost all intact, they have less than 2% complication rate of the foreskin needing medical attention. It's a very small amount, and the doctors are trained in how to treat it. I mean, like any body part, there could be an issue that can come up, and it could require treatment. But, you know,
it's almost like going into a baby and saying, we better take your appendix out now.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many examples that it shows you how, you know, ludicrous the practice is. But, you know, you treat something when it has a problem. So it's a body part. It, you know, feasibly it could tear. It could have some type of skin condition. But these things are all treatable, or, you know, and when you look in Europe, under 2% of the men ever need a circumcision later on in life because they're having a problem. So why would we treat the other 98% when only 2% have the problem?
And what would be the self-care around keeping a foreskin healthy and happy?
You know, it doesn't need a lot of care. You know, really the most important thing is for, and I really want to emphasize this, is that for a newborn, you know, some people aren't familiar with how to care for it. And you don't need to do anything. That's the catch. Mm-hmm. Just leave it alone. Because in a newborn, the foreskin is attached. There's like a membrane there. And it doesn't separate until later on in life. So if someone was to force it back, they call it forcible retraction. It creates scar tissue, and then that causes problems later on in life. And then doctors would be like, you see, you should have cut it off as a baby. No, you should have just, if they would have left it alone, you wouldn't have created the scar tissue, because scar tissue is inflexible, and it causes conditions known as phimosis or paraphimosis or, you know, all these things. That so the number one thing to remember is leave it alone. Some caregivers think they need to retract it to inspect it or to clean it on a baby or a child under, you know, of a young age, and it doesn't retract. It stays forward because it's sealed. There's a membrane that seals it, and pulling it back tears that and causes scarring. So the most important thing I have to stress is just leave it alone. In a mature man, a male, teenager, they know what to do. You take a shower once a day. It just doesn't take a lot. It's just a little bit of water. Even you don't even need to put soap on it, because it would be like putting soap inside your mouth. It might be irritating. So you just rinse it off with some water, and it's fine. It doesn't need any further care from other than that.
Okay, Anthony. And you've been raising awareness for over 10 years now then on this issue. How do you get the word out there to the generations that are just starting to have children?
Well, you know, we do exhibits with the public. We do outdoor events. We're all over the place with our mobile education unit. And we hand out literature. We talk to people. We engage them. People ask us questions. And, you know, a lot of people just are totally uninformed on this issue. And what we find is once we give them our information, it's like they totally get it. They're like, yeah, this makes sense. Nobody ever told us this before.
Really, there's no pro to it for the baby. It's really an unconscious thing for doctors to keep doing it just to for that fee.
It's for the fee. It's what they've been trained in medical school to do. You know, in America around the 1920s, they removed from the anatomy books, they removed the foreskin from the male anatomy, because if you don't tell doctors what it's about and how to treat it, then the only thing they know is how to cut it off. And even in medical school, they don't get education on circumcision. It's on-the-job training. So when a doctor is a resident, they'll bring them into the maternity ward, say, okay, this is how you do a circumcision. I'm going to show you how to do it. That's the extent of their training. And to this day, most U.S. doctors will not administer any anesthesia to a newborn, because they either don't know how to do it or don't want to be bothered with it.
Wow. And just go over some of the problems with circumcision as a baby. Let us know some of the things that we're up against if we allow our children to have that.
Well, you know, there's a lot of really bad cases out there. I mean, I'm in New York, and there was just two cases in the paper in the New York Post where the same doctor botched two babies. You know, they have to use these large clamps to stop the bleeding during the circumcision procedure. And this hospital is using this type of clamp that's been the subject of many malpractice lawsuits. And this large hospital system, they continue to use it. It's called the Mogen clamp. And what happens is the end of the penis can get caught up in the jaws of this device, and it basically, you know, it turns the end of the penis into chop meat. And to make matters worse, is the doctor threw away the tissue, so there was no hope of even trying to do some type of microsurgery to attach it. Same doctor, two babies. These two babies are affected for the rest of their life. I mean, when they have future relationships, their genitals are damaged. Is that any way to start life?
Mm-hmm. Wow. We're going to have to go to a quick break, Anthony. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about what they do with the foreskins after. So we're going to go to a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to be continuing to talk to Anthony LeSquadrel.